Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You okay?
Everything she said is true.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 29, McBride's Head Revisited. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listener.
Did you just say listener like we only have one listener?
No, I know there's more than one.
Okay. I don't know. I haven't looked at the stats lately.
After all this beak content, I don't know. We could be down to just the one.
Enjoy this episode, Denise.
Now you're making. Now you got me in my head. I meant in the collective sense. I'm sorry. Hello to all of our beloved listeners, all 70 million of you. Mm-hmm. We want to tell you before we get into this episode what is happening as we continue our celebration of James Van Der Beek for the month of his birthday. Again with this episode 183 dropping on March 8th is gonna be. That is, in fact, his 47th birthday. Let's watch James Van Der Beek host Saturday Night Live, something he did in the year 1999. Were we ever so young? It is on the Internet Archive if you want to watch the whole thing, including the musical performance singular by Everlast of their one song. But we'll link that in the show notes, and we'll be talking about that, but only for our Patreon supporters. So go to againwiththispodcast.com/club. To join at any level and get that episode, because a lot happens, including at least one sketch that's like part of history, bizarrely. We'll get into it. Let's get into this episode for now, starting with our B plot. Eve and Peter throw their new money around. Unfortunately, we have to open on these two as they're fucking, but takes up screen time, so I'll allow it. When they're done, for now, they exposit that the windfall from the land in Texas has put them in endless honeymoon mode. And throughout this episode, people keep calling it the inheritance, and it's not. And it's very annoying to me.
Right. It's a land lease.
Right. I mean, the land was an inheritance, but not the money.
Right.
Yeah.
But isn't the point of it that it'll just keep coming in?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So anyway.
That's what she said, I guess. I don't. Oh, my God. I mean, it's so little happens. It's really amazing. I'm amazed.
Yes. So since they are both so horny about the money, Peter wonders if they should get it off their minds by parking it in a trust and just continuing doing the jobs they are currently doing. And Eve is like, okay, but decides to put a pin in that for now to make out with him some more. And then at the rock and roll club, Kyle is pacing as he waits for a delivery. Eve chirps in and says she doesn't mind waiting while he gets back to the house lot, the construction site, because she's stuck all day there anyway while Peter's at the hospital, which, like, why is she stuck all day at the club? Doing what?
Yeah, sit in your house.
Right.
Watch a soap opera.
Yes.
Not this one. Something else.
Yeah, we don't, this is part of her being Amanda's entertainment consultant, which kept her out of jail. Like, we don't hear that, but regardless, this gives Kyle the idea of having Eve manage the club. She notes that she doesn't need the money, so he offers her the chance to give him some, very generously of him, by coming in as a partner. And she says she and Peter decided not to spend the money, but Kyle's semantics is that she would be investing it, not spending it. And, you know, Eve's think about it, but he starts to leave. And so she grabs him by the arm and blurts that she's in at 50%, which when Kyle was going to go back to Boston, he gave Amanda full control of the club. So either he took it back, in which case he and Amanda are full partners, or else he didn't, and he actually just made a deal he's not party to, but, you know, whatever, they hug on it. Again, why am I getting into the weeds of this money stuff? The show is so almost over.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's where they leave it for this. Unfortunately, there will be more in the A-plot. Sorry. The next day, the nurses are picketing outside the hospital. You can see this in the visual aids in a shot that Sarah very cleverly titled, Sarah.
Norma Ramey.
Nice.
It's Nurse Amy. R.I.P.
R.I.P. indeed. We miss her.
We do.
Eve comes to tell Peter about buying into the rock and roll club, which that was yesterday. So are we supposed to think Peter has been at the hospital for 24 hours?
Yeah, thank you. She's wearing a different outfit.
Yes.
Like, maybe pick up a phone at the rock and roll club, which
yeah.
presumably is making enough money to still have utilities. Although mm-hmm. that, I wouldn't take that for granted. I guess it depends
yeah.
on what they need the rock and roll club to be doing.
Yes. So he... As she babbles on explaining about what this is, he smirks at her and squints at her. It's very funny. As she talks about turning her career in a more realistic direction, meaning like, I am not going to make it as a singer, so I might as well just facilitate other people doing it. Like, I don't know, man. If you're getting million-dollar checks at regular intervals, I really think you can just fuck around on your career from now on. Like you said, Sarah, like, go home, watch a soap opera. Like, your apartment costs you $300 a month or something ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
Give me a break. But
also, you were playing like underground after hours clubs wearing clothing purchased from the J. Jill catalog.
Yes.
I really think the world is your oyster for some reason.
Yeah.
Go do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. But they then have to pause their conversation as Dr. Shulman storms in to confront Peter about a petition that he and Michael circulated among the doctors in support of the nurses' strike. Peter is unconcerned by Dr. Shulman's threats to take this to the board, but she goes on, clip two.
Maybe they'll toss your sorry ass out of here, especially after I add up all your weaknesses. Incompetency on the job, jailbird wife.
No, bitch, there's something I've been wanting to say to you, especially after the way you messed with my friend Jackie's life.
Well, say it, lady, I don't have all day. I'll add assault to the charges. Watch out.
They don't have to worry about getting a bouncer upstairs at Kyle's. Now that you're on board.
Someone just found out about backhanding and they're doing it a lot. Because that's what happens in scene two. And I'm like, I'm not against it, but it's just funny.
And the Foley design is so over the top on the impact that Dr. Shulman should not have a head that's attached any longer. But I didn't hate it. Like, in this storyline, at least it was something to think about.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Some unspecified amount of time later, Peter storms into a board meeting. Dr. Shulman tries to kick him out, but Barry, the board guy, is like, he's chief of staff. Just get on with it. And so she starts ranting about the petition. When Peter interrupts, Dr. Shulman says he doesn't have a vote, but actually he has the only vote that counts because he just bought the hospital. Okay. Like,
Mergers.
Okay. What? Yes. At this point in 90210 OMG, they have arrived at the point in season five where like Valerie has gotten some money off Jonesy and is spending way too much of it and is, spoiler, from 30 years ago, she's about to run out. And all three of them on OMG are like, how is she paying for all this? What did she actually get? And this is my question about this. Like, how much do a hospital cost? Because I think it's more than $1 million.
Yeah, what?
Anyway, but again, it's almost over, so I don't really care that much. As Dr. Shulman winces, Peter says he has listened to the doctors and nurses and given them the chance to buy in, because from now on, this will be a worker-owned institution. Hell yeah, defector hospital. Let's get into
yes.
it.
Yes.
And what friggin' Barry himself calls Dr. Shulman's reign of terror is over. So, like, way to kick her on her way out. Like, I don't like her either, but damn. Like, she was just doing her job.
Oh, bitchily. Barry.
Yes. So she goes from the meeting to Peter's office. She assumes that she's fired since she didn't sign the petition. But Peter, really feeling himself, says that is up to her and that $200,000 would get her a seat on the board and a vote on operations, even if it's a dissenting one. Peter needs rivals to keep him on his toes, and so she says he's got a deal, adding that money usually corrupts people, but Peter's has made him a better man, and he appreciates the assessment. And then the score is, like, very dark as he just smiles at her leaving. So I don't know what we're supposed to think about all this. Honestly, it just, I thought he was just getting, like, a face rewrite as this show is about to come to an end, but perhaps this is going somewhere bad. I don't know.
I don't either. I just feel like everything in that scene was from a Mad Libs version that they made in the writer's room while they were extremely drunk on, like, marshmallow vodka. I don't even know. But they were like, does this music cue really go? Nope. Who cares? Next.
Next.
Which, I get it. Yeah, fair.
R.A. plot. Lexi and Michael's hijinks get ecclesiastical in Poughkeepsie while Amanda schemes against Lexi's fake company back home. After a long shot of the for sale sign on the complex, we watch Lexi fall in step behind the pool guy and sneak over to knock on Michael's door. And he opens it in a matching pajama set, which both of us separately were like, no, he doesn't.
No.
No, he doesn't.
Especially not with the fold, the cardboard folds still visible on it.
Yeah.
No, no.
Mm-mm. So she smashes a hand on his mouth and shoves her way inside. And he, like, instinctively grabs her around the waist, I guess, to not fall over. But, you know, it's still, it's just even the tiniest moments. He's so sexy. I'm sorry. I'm always here for it.
Hmm.
Did I gif it? Yes, obviously. It's in the visual aids. As we know, they are not into each other and they reset their plot. They're keeping Megan and Ryan apart. Michael hasn't given up on just going ahead and seducing Megan. But as they're talking, they see Ryan come down for basketball just as Megan is leaving for the job she does not have. And immediately the two of them start resetting their plot. Ryan never had to tell Megan about fucking Lexi, but Ryan says his conscience got the better of him. Megan doesn't understand how he could go to New York and love and come back done with her. But Ryan says he just saw before Megan did that they were never going to work out. She shrugs that maybe she will accept the job that Amanda offered, because if Ryan can turn off his feelings that easily, so can she. And then as they part, Michael steps out to get his paper. Clip 3.
Hey, Megan. Hi. For a lady out of work, you sure up early.
Go to hell, Michael.
Right.
I mean, at least there's some professionals on this show, and Calabro's one of them.
It's really true. I love him just taking it. Like, so unlike him. Anyway, back inside, Lexi muses on what Megan said about New York and orders Michael to find out what happened, which, like, even after last week when Ryan, you know, tried to have sex with her and she shut him down, the two of them still have more of a relationship than Ryan and Michael have, so why wouldn't she go and try and figure out something?
Yeah.
But whatever. Mm-hmm. Lexi tells Michael to put on some basketball shoes and go be one of the boys, even though he is so wee. But then we go to the basketball court. Ryan's whining about Megan's new job to Kyle as they shoot around. And Kyle is wearing a shirt that just says Marines, like, in italics. And oops, I bought it. Sorry.
I'm surprised you could see it under the 78-hectare sweatshirt that he is wearing on top of it. And mm-hmm. his blocking is so weird.
Yeah.
He just keeps, like, voguing randomly.
Yes.
And
oh, my God. That's the
perfect
way to
put it. Put any makeup on him. What is happening, Rob Estes? Who hurt you?
Voguing with the ball. You're so right. It's like, it really is category is Space Jam or something. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what he's he's never not making a choice. Like, maybe he's bored, and if that's true, I get it, obviously, because so am mm-hmm. I, but still,
yeah,
it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Ryan asks if Amanda's crazy to hire Megan, and Kyle counters that Ryan is crazy for trying to hurt Megan. And Ryan mopes that he didn't have a choice, but Kyle thinks he did, which was he could tell her his secret, like Kyle finally told Amanda his secret under duress. But I guess that's why he thinks he can lecture Ryan about this now. Kyle says Ryan can't wallow in this his whole life. And as Kyle leaves, Michael rolls up trying to be both jocular and also a jock. And he's also making choices that are weird. A lot of arms, just trying mm-hmm. to be, like, normal. Ryan tells him the only house rule on this court is no talking. And at the office later, Amanda's telling Megan her job is to tell Amanda shit about Lexi. Duh. Megan briefly hesitates before agreeing, but also wants to know, what business did Amanda send Ryan to New York on? And Amanda's like, none. So obviously Megan wants to know more about that, but Amanda shuts that down. And then Ryan enters with some other business and makes things awkward until Amanda kicks them both out to the conference room to figure out their shit. And then Amanda is waylaid by a guy who says his name is Sam Lieberman and his toupee, which is the most obvious toupee I've ever seen. There's a shot of him in the visual aids that you can see the seam, like where it hits his actual grown hair in the back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Their attempts to distract us from that with an extremely burnt sienna tan narrative were unsuccessful, mm-hmm. but oof.
It's a lot. Anyway, he says he wants to buy the complex for the full asking price, not evict anyone, and keep the place exactly as it is, although I assume fix all the shit that's broken. But Amanda is astonished that this miracle has fallen into her lap, but does not question it. And in the conference room, Megan and Ryan are notably not figuring their shit out. She tries to ask what he was doing in New York, but he says they are only going to talk about work. And I guess they aren't starting now, because then he storms out. And outside, Sam Lieberman and his toupee go to a limo and tell its unseen occupant, it's done. The building is yours. Oh, my God. Who could it be? That night.
Chris.
Oh, my God. It's comeback Chris. Of the century, if it were. Sadly,
Steve.
Listeners, spoiler, it's not good. That night, Michael shows up at Ryan's with beer, saying how great it was to play basketball with him earlier. Ryan comments on how odd it is that every time he turns around lately, Michael is there. And Michael's like, we can make real friends now because we can commiserate about getting dumped and stuff. And Ryan was hoping Michael could start seeing Megan so that she would get out of Ryan's hair. But Michael says he gives women one chance, and if they blow it, that ship has sailed. Which, like, I get that Ryan doesn't know Michael's whole romantic history of smelling the spoiled milk and going back in for more, but he has broken up with Jane twice since Ryan's been on the show, including at their wedding, which Ryan attended. So, Ryan, you know this is not true. But fine.
Yeah.
So Michael asks if Ryan has snacks, and when Ryan goes to get some, he taps some kind of powder in Ryan's bottle, and Lexi watches from the courtyard as Ryan's lights flick on and off and then runs up so she and Michael can search the place for anything useful about New York, because, of course, Ryan is passed out on the couch after drinking the drugged beer. There is some art behind Michael in Ryan's apartment. Like, the pajamas were not a patch on the out of characterness of this heart shaped art with like a bunch of scrawled paintings, words, phonemes. I can't even describe it, and I won't try. I don't have to. It's in the visual aids. Hideous. Michael finds round trip tickets, and Lexi finds a map to upstate New York, and I guess Ryan circled Poughkeepsie because he couldn't remember where he was. I don't know why you would circle it on the map. I have no idea. It's so stupid. Michael also finds a visitor's pass to Sarah's school, which, like, they gave it to him when he showed up in the middle of the night, as was established in that first episode. Like, they went to the trouble. Anyway, the school is called St. Agnes. Michael looks alarmed to learn that he was going to have to interact with some Catholics, probably. And then Megan is there. Michael messes himself up to look drunk before opening the door and doing an Irish accent at her. She is confused to see him and in general, but she's just dropping off a box of Ryan's shit and quickly leaves. And Michael runs after her, inviting her out, because just the sight of her sobered him up. But she huffs that she still loves Ryan, and in fact loves him more than she ever loved Michael, which is an insane thing to say, and no one believes it.
No.
Back at Ryan's place, Lexi covers Ryan with a blanket, and he rouses just enough to put his arms around her and mumble, I love you, Megan, which is not what Lexi wants to hear. Michael returns, and the two conscious people exchange intel. Lexi announces they are going to Poughkeepsie, and that night, Amanda's trying to take a bath when Kyle comes in with champagne, because between her selling the complex and Eve buying in at their rock and roll club, they have enough money to finish the house. Also calls Eve and Peter's money an inheritance, still isn't, and when he notices that Amanda seems subdued, she admits she's gotten more attached to the building than she thought. Kyle reminds her that they agreed it's a money pit, but she wistfully says their house won't be as much of a home as the complex. Her life is wrapped up in it. And Kyle mopes that he's not part of all her memories, apparently. So does she want to back out? And she says she just thinks it's all happening too quickly. Clip 4.
Fine. What the hell with it? Why don't you call your broker in the morning and back out? We'll spend the rest of our lives in this dump.
Wow.
Why don't you get some Pampers so that you can continue being a fucking baby?
Yeah, maybe she wouldn't have to sell anything if someone hadn't burned down the first house. I forget who that was. Oh, right. It was you. So fuck off.
And you're still at large for some reason.
Great point. So when Kyle walks out to the window to glare at the pool, Amanda comes out after him to indulge this temper tantrum, pulling his arm over her and asking him to hold her and saying it'll all work out. Kyle promises that it will, that so they'll do it and never look back. I'd love to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So then Lexi and Michael are in Poughkeepsie, the latter looking absolutely sick at the news that the school is run by nuns. This stuff runs deep, you guys. It's just, this is a trauma. You just have to survive it. She adds that it's extremely strict and doesn't permit visitors. Michael rants at Lexi for convincing him to come and leave Megan alone, but then she notices a St. Agnes van in an alley that has its doors open and nuns and priests' habits inside and gets a cartoon-worthy idea. Back in L.A., Megan continues spilling on Lexi to Amanda, saying that Lexi's most dissatisfied client is Jacoby Toys. She keeps saying it. Everyone says Jacoby and not Jacoby, like Jacoby and Myers. So I don't know how it would be spelled. Anyway, it seems weird to me. Amanda signs Ryan to pitch them. Ryan snits that raiding is unethical. Amanda says it's how she's always done business, and when Ryan further shits on her as a bottom feeder, Megan breaks in to say that Ryan fucking Lexi is both bottom feeding and unethical, and Amanda's like, I told you two to knock it off with your personal shit. I'm paraphrasing. Ryan thinks Amanda's vendetta is also personal, but Amanda calls it self-defense. So Amanda gives the toy company to Megan and leaves Ryan to sneer at Megan for emulating Amanda. Megan thinks it's too bad Ryan can't emulate Kyle by keeping it in his pants. And then Amanda stops at Jane's drafting table, rousing her from a daydream, and Jane cheerfully admits she's been daydreaming a lot lately and guesses it's because she doesn't have a guy in her life right now. And as she babbles on to her boss, as though Amanda did not just catch her doing literally nothing at work, Amanda's like, I don't have time for this. But Jane wants to pitch Madison Galleries, a company that buys old churches and turns them into, guess what, galleries. And Amanda is intrigued. And then we're at the school. His father, Michael, and sister, Alexandra, put on their gentlest voices and say they are from the Catholic School Association for a routine tour. Sister Abby, the head of school, is on her way to Mass, but they could join her there, and they pretend to think that sounds great and not that if they both go into a chapel, they will instantly burst into flames and die, which we all know is the case.
Mm-hmm.
So after falling in with a crowd on their way to Mass, Michael and Lexi peel off hijinksfully and try to make friends with a groundskeeper. Clip 5.
Afternoon, my son.
Father, won't you catch hell not going to Mass?
Once does not a sinner make thee.
Well said. Is that from the Bible?
The St. Mancini version. Mm-hmm. It's very rare.
This is the most I ever liked her, by the way.
She's really bad at seeming Catholic. It's very funny. In a second, she's like, passes a crowd of kids and like does a very half-assed, way worse than Donna's sign of the cross. She just does not know what she's doing.
No, it's like diagonal. It's like an X. It's crazy.
Also, when the groundskeeper says catch hell, every time I hear that phrase, it always reminds me of the episode of Law and Order with Laura Linney, where she was the singer who like went to Japan. And then later accuses a Japanese businessman of having assaulted her while she was there. And like they try to dismantle her like abused women defense. Because she read it in a book, like, the smallest thing I ever did, I'd catch hell from him. And she uses all of the exact same words on the stand or in a deposition or something. And I always remember that episode that for some reason I've seen like 17 times.
Yeah. It's always on the Before They Were Famous marathon on Wii. So,
yep. Anyway, wish I was watching Law and Order right now, but we're not.
Me too.
Michael and Lexi say they are looking for Sarah and the groundskeeper directs them, but they mistakenly think that Sarah is Terry. And when Terry introduces herself and points to the actual Sarah, Lexi and Michael are shocked to see she's a child. So Michael lies that Sarah is supposed to tell them her thoughts on the school, Lexi adding that Sister Abby okayed it. Nice con work. Terry is fine with it, moves on, and the Angelinos descend upon Sarah for information. Clip six.
Can you tell us how you first came to St. Agnes?
Well, after my mother died, my Aunt Terry took me in. And then when she went to work here, I enrolled. That was about 4 years ago. First grade. I live right on campus in the dorm.
And your father?
He lives in California. But he visits when he can. But you want to know what I think about school?
Oh, sure. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a great school. The greatest.
Don't bullshit a bullshitter, Sarah. Come on.
It's the greatest.
Back in LA, it's love or something at first sight as Jane goes to a church I swear we've seen before based on the establishing shot. I tried to confirm and couldn't. And I was very frustrated. But she walks in and she is so dumbstruck by the guy inside painting a canvas. I was like, okay, she knows this guy already. They've met before. They haven't established that she had a dream about him or something. Like, it's so, her reaction is so strange and it never gets explained at all.
Yeah. Also, he looks like the love child of, in the visual aids, I said, you know, my face when I realize I'm the beta of Ben McKenzie.
Totally.
Because he does look like Ben McKenzie, but he actually looks more like Ben McKenzie and... Who's the guy who's the disputed one to watch from Listen to Sassy that you said
George
he was?
George Newbern?
Yes. It's like George Newbern and Ben McKenzie's sperm got swirled.
Yes.
And this is what happened. He's like not a bad looking guy.
No.
But
I mean, now that we've brought up the swirled sperm thing, I hesitate to say he's got a little Bruce Boxleitner in him as well, but he does.
Box.
Anyway, Jane recovers and says why she's there, giving him her card. He is Jim Rogers, who owns the church slash gallery company. I don't know if someone forgot before she mentioned before it was Madison Galleries. Like, I don't know why he's not Jim Madison, unless someone was like, well, we want his to be named Jim, but we don't want anyone to think of James Madison. I have no idea, but whatever. His name is Jim Rogers. He has ignored all of her calls because he doesn't really believe in advertising. But since she is there, he might as well hear her spiel. And Jane, you had the whole car ride over to come up with something better than this. Clip seven.
Well, it all comes down to enticing them in, luring them through that door. I want to go almost religious with this. Not a gallery, a temple. Zen-like, Tibetan music. Quite an artist.
Nothing worth showing anyone. It's a hobby.
Well, I think it's very interesting. You should show it.
In artist's hands. An artist's eye. Do you know my theory on why people create?
Passion for art, a need for expression,
loneliness.
Really?
Are you lonely, Jane?
Sometimes.
Me too.
Are you seducing me?
No. You seduced me the moment you came in the door.
God.
Is it raining?
Seriously? Oh, God.
Ugh. These two, it's like there's no charisma anywhere. It's like two cotton balls trying to fuck. Like, it's just, there's nothing there.
The bland fucking the bland. Yep.
But, like, they try to get something going about this by having the two of them, like, make out against and, like, all over his still wet canvas. And you can see this in the visual aids. It is so stupid. Like, not since Colin on 90210 has art taken such a hit in the Starverse, truly.
And it was also brown in this case as well. Mm-hmm. Now that you mentioned it, that it just all got mushed up in her hair, which maybe that's why she keeps it short, because they can't think of anything else to do with her character except this.
Yeah.
Ghost or like ghast, a ghast. Ugh, it's bad.
But if you're thinking, okay, we're about to find out, like, he's a cult leader or he, like, you know, hypnotized her somehow, there's no explanation at any point for why they end up here this fast. Like, it's just, they're both super horny, which, like, I get it. They're both attractive, but it's so, they both are acting like they're in a dream. Like, it's just so strange.
It really is. And it's like off brand for this show, which like has no problem with people just fucking. But this kind of weird thing.
Yeah.
Is a little off brand. Let's blame it on the paint fumes and move on.
Yeah. For her, especially. This is not her thing. Anyway, that night, Sister Alexandra creeps into Sarah's room and immediately admits she's not a nun, but that this was the only way she could come and see Sarah. And instead of screaming, Sarah lets Lexi keep talking and say that she knows Ryan and is in love with him. Clip 8.
You mean you're Megan?
Well.
Oh my gosh, this is so great. Daddy told me all about you, how pretty you were. I mean, are.
Oh, well, thanks. I work out.
I just. What are you doing here?
Well, Sarah, I went through this great length because your dad has this problem, and I'm not sure you're aware of it. You see, he won't marry me or anyone because of the promise that he made to you.
It's not a promise. It's just the way he is. He can't love anyone as much as he loved my mother.
Yeah, but, you know, your mom's gone now, and he's got to move on. He's got to find someone else. But hey, that doesn't mean he's going to love you any less. In fact, when Ryan and I get together, I'll make sure you see him much more. How about all the time?
Pass.
You better go.
Just think about what I said, okay?
What? I mean, unless her plan is like full Sound of Music Baroness, like I don't know what her end game is here. Cause like eventually Sarah is going to find out he's not Megan.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ryan's going to find out. Like this is such a short-sighted plan.
Yeah. Also, it really was just last week that Sarah was like, that's not our deal. You promised.
Yes.
Like in those words.
Yes.
I mean, why I care what happens in this plotline. I spent most of these scenes coming up with other three name figures of history that it would be funny to call John, whatever his name is, Wendell Holmes, like Bonham Carter. I mean, this is how boring it is. I don't know why I'm objecting to anything about it. Proceed. Do whatever.
At the agency the next day, Amanda's trying to work while Megan blathers about Ryan hiding something, and I would love all the blondes to take a beat and remember they are at work and Amanda is not really their friend. Amanda points out the major entrepreneur in the conference room that Jane landed without falling in love. Right, Jane? And Jane's like, yes. And then Jane breathlessly enters the conference room where Jim tells her he sent papers to his lawyer. But before Jane takes off again, slip 9.
I just wanted to say that last night was incredible for me.
Yeah.
I love you, Jane.
You what?
Will you marry me?
Jim. My God, I've only known you for 24 hours.
I don't need more time to know that this is it. I've waited my whole life to find someone like you.
Look, I can't rush into this. I mean, I'm separated. My divorce isn't even final. Last night was just crazy.
I thrive on impulse, Jane. But I'll respect your caution. Just tell me that you'll at least consider a relationship.
Okay, I'll consider it.
What? I don't.
It's how you bargain is how you bargain. Your first offer is you're going to live with me forever, and you bargain them down to, well, maybe I'll consider going on a date. Seems very successful strategy to me.
This does seem like something they saw on one of those like pickup artist TV shows that were on like TBS at around this time.
Yeah. There's no explanation for why he is like this. Like he's, I mean, again, spoiler, he's never in another episode. Like you think, I mean, there's another theory that I had after the next scene that he's in, which we'll get to. But here it's like, okay, is he well? Like, is he under someone's care? Is he not even in charge of Madison Galleries? He's just a dude that like wandered in and started painting a thing. And Jane was like, I guess I'll pitch this dude. I don't know. Like none of it is ever explained.
No.
Anyway, he's just in there that night inviting himself over to Jane's place because his place is a mess and she's still too shell-shocked to say no thank you. And when we meet them next, he's showing up for this dinner and saying, you know, everything smells great. He knew she'd be a great cook. And when he drops a bag on one of the stools at the kitchen peninsula, she asks, what is that? And he says, clip 10.
Just some stuff, toothbrush, change of clothes, since I'm probably spending the night. Well, this place is great, too. Too big for just one person. Wasted space.
Are you saying that you're moving in with me?
I thought you'd never ask.
Jim, I can't do this. You are moving way too fast.
Come on.
No, I'm serious. I've done this before, and with guys I've known much longer, and it never works.
Both feet, Jane. You jump right in. That's how it's done.
No. Okay, no.
I'm sorry. Guess I got carried away by my feelings for you. You know what? I'm gonna leave. I'll call you tomorrow, okay? We'll plot a new course.
What?
That's when I was like, okay, he's unhoused. And like, he's just, he has nowhere else to go. That's why he's coming on so strong and trying to get her to let him live with her, because otherwise this makes him sick.
Right, or it's some sort of like wild Trojan horse in reverse from Lexi, but it's like she's not that smart and neither are the writers and she's in Poughkeepsie in a nun's habit. Like, I don't know what's happening.
Or he's like Dirty Jim. He's Dirty John's brother.
Dirty Jim.
Anyway. Oh, God, I wish I was watching Dirty John right now. Anyway, that night, Megan sneaks into Lexi's office and grabs a binder. Lexi's assistant, Julie, is there fooling around with some dude. And I forget if we talked about this here or not. In the episode of Shannon Doherty's podcast that Holly Marie Combs was on, she was talking about how Aaron Spelling is like super micromanagey about especially women's haircuts because he wants them all to look different. And like is, you know, really really draconian about no one changing their look because he thought like it's important for the audience to be able to like track who is who. And this show needed to have followed that rule because I swear to God, when we first see Julie, I thought it was Jane. Like, I didn't know. I didn't recognize her at all because she's another like short haired blonde. Julie and the guy she's fooling around with both beg Megan not to tell Lexi anything. And Megan preens at the leverage this gives her, which like, okay, A, no one cares. B, surely these two people that still do work for Lexi knows Lexi and Megan are not on good terms and Megan doesn't work there anymore.
Right.
This gives them leverage over her, not the other way around. Anyway, at the complex, people start gathering in the courtyard. Clip 11.
Well, I'm glad you called this meeting. I can thank the man personally.
Thank him for what? Didn't you hear? He's cutting everybody's rent in half. You're joking.
What about the rent? Well, where have you been, huh? Amanda sold the building.
Well, there's got to be a catch. I mean, he didn't say anything about cutting the rent. It's ludicrous.
Hey, what's going on?
You're about to meet your new landlord.
Yeah, well, he's late.
Sorry, Lexi, this is for tenants only.
Yes. Yes, I understand you're going to meet the new landlord.
What? How would you know that?
Well, I'm the new landlord.
I know him, Lexi. I met him. Short, gray hair.
Yeah, Sam Lieberman. Yeah, he's my friend. Well, I see you all got the notices. Well, don't all thank me at once. Amanda, honey, I've been doing the math, and, well, you've been gouging these poor souls for years. Which apartment should I make mine? Wait, I got it. Let me rephrase that. Which apartment's the best?
Take mine. If you're moving in, I'm moving out.
Oh, wow, thank goodness. Because that'll save me the trouble of tripling your rent.
Quite easy.
Amanda, I want you out in 30 days.
I'll be out in 30 minutes.
Come on, don't look so glum. I am really going to liven this place up. You'll see, we're gonna have barbecues and pool parties. I was thinking about turning one of the garages into a rec room. Yeah? Ping pong, anyone?
You can't do a bit where everyone is slamming doors, because when they do, you can hear how cheap and shitty they sound. Those are not front door quality doors. They are like barely a bathroom door, honestly. They sound so light.
Very noises off. And except not as funny.
No. Wish I was watching Noises Off right now.
I know, me too.
The next day, Megan is at Kyle's, wrapping up a successful dinner meeting with a couple of toy executives when Calyptoiled.
You thieving whore! These are my clients!
Not anymore, Lexi. We're exercising our outlaws.
You stole my files, Julie told me. You're a thief. You're a petty thief.
No, they were my ideas. You just left them sitting there.
You were my employee when you came up with them. Gentlemen, can we talk fair here?
It's too late, Lexi. The papers are already signed.
Fine. In that case, I'm gonna kill you!
Kill you! Come on, take it easy! I got this,
Lexi! Go on, you fine! I'm gonna... You're okay, all right, I'm fine! Oh, God. Oh, who are you calling me crazy?
Will you relax? It was an act. I'm playing Megan's savior. Did you see her face, huh? Totally appreciative. If this does not close the deal, I don't know what will.
Yeah, well, it cost me a huge deal. I don't know what's gotten into Megan. I mean, Amanda's turning into a clone of herself. It's really scary.
Pretty impressive, huh? She stepped right up to the plate.
Yeah, I forgot. You're attracted to deceit. Oh, God, I gotta go meet the movers. You know what? You tell Megan if she breaks into my office again, I'm pressing charges.
Does Lexi think that anyone wants someone working on their account that would storm into a public place screaming, "You thieving whore," because they don't.
Yeah. While wearing an ace bandage made of velour.
I mean, I know you wanted to kick out Amanda as like a power play, and I understand, but you are currently living presumably rent free in Peter's condo. Like, why wouldn't you stay? It's much nicer. Like, it's not like you want to be with your friends. They all hate you. Regardless, after Lexi has impotently flounced off, Megan comes out thanking Michael for his intervention and wanting to celebrate. He spots a couple of open bar stools, but he knows what happens when he gets her drunk. She makes him agree they won't go up on the roof this time, but otherwise has no issue with him planning to drive her home.
And what happened to the clients? Like, the paperwork is signed. Everyone's ready to celebrate. Mm-hmm. Let's go sit at the bar 10 feet away from the clients you just fucking ditched when your old boss tried to attack them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
even one line dispensing with them. Like, record it like a wild line that's like, "We're getting the car from the valet. Yeah. Okay, we're going to get drunk together now." Like, we understand that it's the end of the show. Just anything.
Yeah. Business, 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 business. Over to the basketball court, Kyle exposits that this is going to be Ryan's last chance to beat him for a while because he and Amanda are moving in with Jane at the beach house. Jane, why? Why would you? Like, I know the reason is they don't want to build more sets, and I understand, but come on, Jane. Like, have them move into Lexi's condo.
or you do it. Jeez.
Right. Yes. It's not like Peter wouldn't let you.
Mm-hmm.
So why isn't Peter moving back into his condo?
There's so much glass brick going to waste, people.
That's so true. Kyle also calls Ryan Ivy League, which I think is new information. And I apologize if we've talked about this before. Have we? Has this come up before that Ryan went to an Ivy League school, supposedly?
Maybe.
Well, where do you think
Stanford?
He went?
I thought he went to Stanford. Maybe there was a Harvard MBA in there somewhere.
Well, he's from back east. You know, they're from Boston. Right.
Who knows what John Jessica Parker was going to be up to back there.
Also, nice try with the Lakers sweatshirt, Kyle, but you are still not my fave and you never will be. Back to the scene. Ryan is distracted because he got a letter from Sarah. Clip 13.
She's freeing me, her exact words. Apparently when I went to go talk to her about Megan, I made an impression she wants me to go ahead and marry her.
What? This is a good thing, right?
It's just so unexpected.
What? The kid grew up. That happens. You know, you can't waste any more time. You gotta go tell Megan. Tell the whole story. Give her your reasoning, and then explain why you pushed her away.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, you do.
Okay. Lexi is so lucky that Sarah didn't say, I met Megan. Megan came to my room, and I'm convinced. Mm-hmm. That you should marry her now. Like, how didn't she?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. So we agree.
I mean, it's so late in the game to be introducing this kid. Never mind to try to be giving her any sort of like realistic human motivations. Never mind a semi-orphaned 10-year-old. It's just... a big, I would say, swing, but it's just flailing at this point, and we should look away.
Yeah. Back at the complex, Amanda supervises the mover taking out last box and looks around sadly at the empty apartment. Enter Lexi, gloating that she was sure Amanda would have been gone by now. Lexi has already heard about Amanda and Kyle moving into Jane's spare room and says she would have let Amanda stay, but Amanda just sidles past her. Clip 14.
Boy, Amanda, you really are a sore loser. Have you always been like that?
You know something. You can buy my building, you can move into my apartment, and you can stab me in the back a million times, but you'll never be me. You'll always be a distant second.
Second? She wishes.
Yeah. No.
My God, Jane is ahead of Lexi. Fuck.
She's not even the number one redhead.
No.
In this situation. Come on.
No. R.I.P. Sydney, we miss you. Wish I was watching Sydney right now.
Oh, over to the God. Beach house. Or David Charvet, even.
God. Did you ever think you'd see the day, honestly?
No.
Me neither. Over to the beach house, where the stairs off the deck are fucking finally done, as we see in an establishing shot, and where Amanda is, predictably, a bad guest, complaining about losing hot water after 2 minutes and informing Jane that they will be installing a second phone line. Also, she comes out of Jane's bedroom drying her hair, so I guess these three adults are going to be sharing the one John in Jane's master suite, so that'll be fun. But since the second phone line still isn't in, someone reaches Amanda on her cell phone. Clip 15.
The gallery boy called. He bailed. I knew this would happen. Then why did you break up with him? We were never together. Rumor has it you slept with him. Yeah, well, anything for the account, right? Isn't that your philosophy? Whatever it takes to get him to sign. In ink. After that, do with him whatever you want. Amanda, the guy was a wacko. I was just being honest with him. No, you were being an empty-headed fool. The guy was gorgeous, rich, into everything you're into. I don't see any man around here. What are you holding out for, another madman like Michael? All you had to do was date the guy, give him a chance, get him to sign. He said he loved me after one night.
I thought Michael had given up.
Not Michael, a top shelf client. He was moving too fast, I broke it off. And then he blew off the agency.
Well, if the guy's a jerk.
You don't know anything about this, and neither do you. You don't have a clue about this business, Jane.
I'll talk to her.
Talk to the writers. They're the ones who are making her an unreasonable bitch. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. String along a stalker who may have some psychological challenges.
Yeah.
Not
why not?
Appropriate. Also, you hired her, so whose right? fault is this really?
Yes. 100%. So Kyle goes to the spare room and stops Amanda blow drying her hair to ask why she's being such a bitch, basically. And she snaps at him to hurry up and finish the house because she doesn't know how long she can stay there, which, like, it's night one. So, you know, maybe you should have thought this through before you made this plan. After Amanda decisively shuts Kyle down, she resumes blow drying her hair and he just trudges back out, drawn to Jane and her glass of wine on the deck. He asks if Jane's okay. Jane says everything Amanda said is true. Clip 16.
You can't think like that.
No, I'm serious. I thought advertising would be creative, you know, but it's not. It's about selling. What am I saying? It's about manipulating.
Amanda is the best at that.
Do you ever feel like you'll never measure up?
Every day.
What do you do about it?
You live for yourself, and to hell with what anyone else says.
Not at all what Kyle's life philosophy is, but sure, why not?
No.
Back at the complex, Lexi walks into the courtyard just in time to see Ryan pounding on Megan's door. Megan lets him in, breathless, and holding a robe around herself, and starts to ask if this is about the toy client, but no. Clip 17.
No, it's about us. It's about what's going on with me.
You know, your timing is really bad, and you...
What?
You said you didn't love me, and...
And what?
And can you come back tomorrow? What are you doing?
He goes into the bedroom.
I was sleeping.
No one's in the bed. He flings open the closet door and Michael's in there holding a throw pillow to his crotch. And...
Oh.
Okay.
The sex guitar is so disappointed. So disappointed.
This moment had me smirking at my desk for so long. Like, obviously, I know I'm completely in the bag for Michael, but and it's such thin gruel, but I guess I'm hungry because this was the one thing in the episode that worked on me at all.
That he swooped. I think it's actually a scarf.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Like, I took a screenshot of it and it was like sailing. I tried to like frame by frame it to see if we could see, you know, Major League Baseball things. We could not. Calabro's a professional. But yeah, there is just something about, like, that he is still trying. And he's not the only person in the cast that's still trying, but he's the only one that's, like, getting it to work. Everyone else either is bad or is getting such weird writing that it's impossible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, God bless Thomas Calabro, Michael Mancini. Yes, he is so smug, with good reason.
Let's close it up by, seems like a foregone conclusion, but let's go through the motions anyway. Episode MVP. Him.
I'm going to say the nurses union, actually. They got what they needed. Good for them.
Yes. All right. Yes, fair. But I'm going to say him anyway. Least valuable player. Whoever is in charge of security at St. Agnes School, because tighten that shit up. There are children around.
Yeah. Also, whoever's in charge of security at their dry cleaner, guys, just shut the doors. This is basic. Next time on Again With This, Dawson's Creek edition, Bessie's baby arrives, along with hints of Grams's canonical awesomeness, and smoking in the bathroom claims another victim as the Capeside High rumor mill grinds up Pacey and Tamara's, quote, relationship. Our visual aids will grind your cornea into a gritty paste. Find those for all episodes of the podcast at againwiththispodcast.com. We're also on Blue Sky at Again With This. We're on Instagram at Again With This Podcast, and you can call or text us, 210-920-4699. I'm thieving whore Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Jackson Pillick, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. Thank you, Tara. And our producer, David T. Cole, is pressing charges, and I don't blame him. Talk to you next time.
Leave this to the professionals. Come on. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.